Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is the Balkans, a Serbian Spring, focusing on the growing anti-government movement in Serbia. The central Balkan state of Serbia has been rocked by increasingly violent protests that have begun to employ classic color revolution tactics. There's been ongoing unrest for a few months already over fears that President Vucic will sell out the historic province of Kosovo as part of a compromise deal for joining the EU, which compounded pre-existing concerns that his rule has become authoritarian due to the control that his government is alleged to have over the media and civil society. The people's right to peacefully protest has hitherto been largely respected by the authorities, but they finally felt compelled to crack down after recent demonstrations got out of control and saw activists briefly breaking into the state TV building. The next day, a small number of them split from the larger crowd that was protesting Vucic's speech about the previous day's event and attempted to break through the police cordon surrounding the presidential palace while the nation's leader was still inside. It's due to these increasingly dramatic events that the president vowed to prevent the radicalization of the protest and not flinch in the face of the latest developments. He also called out the opposition leaders by saying that, quote, "I wanted to show to the people of Serbia that fear from hooligans, thugs, fascist leader Boško Obradović, and tycoon leaders Dilas and Jeremić should not exist," end quote, adding that they, and these are in his words, want to return to power to continue stealing, end quote. For some observers, these events remind them of the many color revolutions of the past two decades that ironically first broke out in Belgrade during the 2000 Bulldozer Revolution. Since then, it was presumed that such occurrences wouldn't ever repeat themselves there because the country seemed to be solidly on the pro-Western track, though it's here where two diverging theories begin to emerge. One suggests that the latest violence might be part of a U.S.-encouraged effort to unseat the Russian-friendly leader and foil the plans for the Turk's Dream pipeline to traverse through the country en route to Central Europe, while the other says that these are patriotic manifestations that are desperately trying to save the country before it's too late. Folks, what's happening in the Balkans is immensely important. As regular listeners of Trendstorm know, I feel very personally connected to the region, and we always try to keep tabs on what's happening there. So having said that, we're going to speak to two distinguished experts today to help make sense of what's happening in Belgrade, why, and where it could be headed. So the first one that we're going to speak to today is Mr. Joaquin Flores. He is the chief editor of Fort Rus News and director of the Center for Syncretic Studies.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Joaquin, now last weekend you published an article about the latest events that also touched on the political motivations and international connections of the two protest leaders that Vucic recently called out. So can you please share your insight about them with our audience?
Well, what has been going on here in Serbia for some time is a long process, really, where after a long period of a number of decades, Serbia had been in the aftermath of a war in the 90s, which broke apart Yugoslavia. Finally, Serbian leadership arrived on a compromise candidate who ultimately has been sitting in two chairs, and this is Vucic. And in so doing, in sitting in two chairs, he's had to sort of straddle both pro-EU and Western sentiments, as well as, one could say, Serbian sovereignties that lean towards Russia. And this has to do with Serbia's religious, historical, and cultural ties to Russia, and as a Slavic country, Orthodox as well. And so what has happened over the course of time is that in sitting in these two chairs, this is not satisfactory, ultimately, towards the needs of the United States. Interestingly, the European Union seems to be a little bit more flexible with Vucic, but as well, Brussels in particular seems to be losing patience also. Bear in mind that Vucic, when he became prime minister in 2014, among his foreign policy aims was integration into the European Union, but he's always opposed integration into NATO. And so what's interesting now is that in order to maintain basic rule of law, in order to build sovereign structures, has required what we find everywhere else in the world in what's called the developmental model in the field of international politics. And in this model, which we're seeing unfold here in Serbia, the government has to take better control of sovereign institutions, where we really see that the government and the state are one. And so while nominally and constitutionally these are separate institutions, what we see in many cases around the world and here in Serbia is that if the government is weakened, actually the state institutions are weakened. And so what we find now is a protest movement in which we have a liberal opposition and a nationalist opposition, which are, now to be clear, they have legitimate grievances. And as well, by and large, the vast majority of the supporters of these movements, and they're not tremendously large movements, I should say parenthetically, that the vast majority of people in these movements do not believe that they are being supported or manipulated by foreign powers like the United States. However, at the leadership level, there is not only circumstantial evidence, but clear and direct empirical evidence. In the case of opposition leader Vuk Jeremic, he was openly supported by the U.S. consular offices, the U.S. State Department, in the last election, 2016-2017 period, openly supported. And this is not forgotten by the majority of Serbian voters who voted for Vucic. Now, Vucic has gone from being prime minister to being president in a move that we've seen take place in other countries which have been moving against destabilization and towards stabilization.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not surprising. But the liberal opposition, of course, has a problem with this compared to, a Western European or American model. You're expected to rotate the prime minister or president every 4 or 5 years and then not expect them to change offices to maintain power. So basically you have then on the, to summarize on the nationalist end, they are very upset that Vucic has entered into the Brussels Agreement, which may open the door towards recognizing an independent Kosovo. And as your listeners know, there's a history in Kosovo, which is a foreign occupied, there's a U.S. military based with a proxy, nominally Albanian government in the Serbian province, Serbian autonomous region of Kosovo.
Okay, well, Joaquin, we only got about a couple minutes left. So real briefly then, I mean, I think this was an excellent review of the backdrop and the context in which we find ourselves right now. And as you mentioned, I mean, there are many dyed-in-the-wool patriots who strongly oppose Vucic's speculated sellout of Kosovo, but would be mortified that their participation in the protest might be inadvertently playing into foreign hands. So real quickly, what should those folks do to prevent their right to peacefully protest from being exploited?
It's really important that these protesters continue to peacefully protest. And it's very important that they keep the pressure on the present government, on Vucic. People need to understand that Vucic is a transmission belt of the pressures that exist, both from Serbia back towards the world and from the world into Serbia. So he's a reflection of the balance of power. And the more that Serbians are able to protest and voice their opposition to various policies, especially the nationalist demands regarding economic and territorial integrity, that this forces Vucic and shows Vucic and gives Vucic the bargaining power that he can then show back to the so-called international community and say, look, these things that you want me to do are impossible. There's thousands of people in the streets saying, no, you know, we cannot, go forward more with, let's say, a redivision of the borders, or we can't recognize Kosovo because there'd be riots in the streets. So I think that it's important, but at the same time, what citizens need to avoid are agent provocateurs who may try to provoke the peaceful protesters into doing things like storming government buildings, which has happened now twice in the last few days. And in so doing, that they threaten to destabilize the state because, of course, doing illegal things like Vuk Jeremic is now calling to do, like form roadblocks. These are not peaceful resistance. These are forms of violence against the rest of the population who, in several millions, voted for Vučić overwhelmingly with a 65% voter turnout in the last election, winning 55% of the vote is enough of a mandate. And we can look all over briefly to summarize, Western European governments where you have a prime minister whose party won 25% of the vote and then they form a coalition government. So this is not the case of Vučić, who clearly has a mandate, who won clear majority, not just a plurality. So I think that the best advice is to remain level-headed and not fall for conspiratorial views or character assassinations, to focus on the issues mm-hmm. and to understand that the liberal demands and the nationalist demands are very, very different, and they don't agree on anything, in fact. And so the tactic to remove him by the Western powers is supposed to blur that line of difference and to make it a single attack on his character of a conspiratorial nature.
Okay, Joaquin, this was a very insightful explanation of what's going on in Serbia and why, as well as the predicament that Vučić has found himself in by sitting on two chairs, as you put it. I also think that you shared some very good advice for how to prevent people's right to peacefully protest from being exploited by hostile third parties. So thank you again for that, Joaquin. Now we're going to switch over and get the other side of the debate from Mr. Stefan Gajic. He is a PhD in political science who works at the Institute of European Studies in Belgrade.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Stefan, my impression during our last interview back in January was that you had a favorable attitude towards the protest, but has that changed after some activists briefly stormed the state TV building and tried to break the police cordon around the presidential palace?
No, on the contrary, I believe that unfortunately Vučić only reacts to pressure, and we have seen that in the last couple of weeks. There were several cases of outrageous behavior by the functionaries of the Serbian Progressive Party. For instance, one chief of municipality in a municipality of Grodska ordered burning of a house of a journalist. And if it wasn't for the protests, and I would even say for the radicalization of the protests, Vučić would not sack off this man. And it did happen as a result. And there are some other cases. A man in a southern municipality who was harassing his female colleague was also lost his job only after the protest. So the opposition understood that in order to free the media, to give an incentive to Vučić to open the media for the opposition for another opinion, really is to actually pressure the media on the spot. And I think that this was a move which changed the dynamics of the protests, which will get, I think, more heated in the time ahead of us.
Okay, I see. Well, now, you're talking about it. Things might get heated, more in the time ahead of us. And that kind of brings me to asking you about Vučić's vow to prevent the protest radicalization. I mean, one would almost naturally wonder whether the means that he could rely upon might actually be counterproductive and feed into the anti-government movement if they're seen as authoritarian. So if I get you right, it almost seems like you might almost be expecting some type of possibly forcible crackdown on the opposition movement. Like, what do you think is going to happen next?
I think that Vučić is losing his nerves, which is why he used police force. And every move of such nature is counterproductive. For instance, there was a high school student who was arrested a couple of days ago on no grounds. And this only provoked the high school students from all over Serbia to join the protest. They originally were not interested in politics whatsoever, but now even they are part of it. And as we have seen so far, every sign of brutality would actually only provoke more, or not only brutality, sign of, for instance, misinformation or irony from the authorities would only provoke the protest. Even the name of the protest, 1 on 5 million, started from Vučić's statement, who said that if there's 5 million of you protesting, just to clarify, there's 7 million people in Serbia altogether. So he said, if there's 5 million of you, I will still not bow to any of your your demands, which basically said that I don't care because I'm a dictator. I don't care what my people think. So that's how the protests started being called one among the 5 million.
Okay, well then, Stefan, where do we go from here? I mean, it seems like some elements of the protest have indeed radicalized, as we discussed. There seems to be an impending threat of violence from either side, whether it's from the protesters or the state responding to them or possibly even being proactive with such means. I mean, where do you see everything headed here? I mean, does it seem like the situation getting more unstable?
The opposition gave an ultimatum to Vucic, to the Prime Minister Brnabic, and to the Chief of the Parliament, Maja Gojković, to go step down from their functions, or else there will be a huge demonstration in Belgrade where people from all over Serbia will come on the 13th of April. And I think that the people will stay on the streets until these demands are met. The problem is that the opposition understood that there are no institutional means of political struggle in Serbia, because the parliament became a circus because of the behavior of the leadership of the Serbian Progressive Party. And also, the president himself actually spat on the constitution because he said that the possibility of giving Kosovo or parts of our sovereign territory to somebody else is a possibility for him, which makes him illegitimate in effect, because he sweared on the constitution, and the first sentence of the Serbian constitution says that Kosovo is an undivided part of Serbia. And for some time now, he is being challenging that, and recently openly said that a so-called drawing of new borders between Serbs and Albanians based on ethnic lines is what will happen one way or another. So basically, he spat, as I said, on the constitution, and therefore destructed any meaningful means of institutional struggle.
Okay, Stefan. Well, then the last thing I want to ask you is, what do you say to those who allege that there's an indirect foreign hand guiding events that intends to meddle in your domestic affairs for geopolitical reasons? I mean, what's your retort to that?
Well, I think this doesn't stand. I mean, the usual matrix is that there is a good, quote-unquote, Assad, Yanukovych, or Milosevic, or whoever, and an evil CIA who wants to take them down. But in Serbia, it doesn't work that way, because actually Brussels, and more specifically NATO and EU officials, support Vucic. We had only 2 days ago, Johannes Hahn, who is European Commissioner for European Neighboring Policy and Enlargement Negotiations, so one of the most important people, who actually told the opposition to go back to the parliament, that everything should calm down. The same thing we heard from Maja Kocijančić, who is speaker in front of Mogherini, and also David McAllister, who is a reporter for Serbia from the EU. So EU is very nervous about the protest because they have broke some kind of deal with Vucic so he can give Kosovo. Because the main goal, in my view, of Brussels, of collective Brussels, let's say NATO and EU Commission, current EU Commission, is to push all the Balkans into NATO. With Kosovo, if Kosovo becomes independent, quote unquote, with the yes from Serbia, then it would join the Greater Albania. And both Hashim Tači from Kosovo and Edi Rama, Prime Minister of Albania, repeatedly said that this is a favorable outcome, which would make Kosovo part of NATO. Then, of course, Serbia would not be able to be a neutral country anymore, and would also go to the same path. So here we have the Atlanticist powers, let's say, and globalist powers, let's be quite honest, supporting Vucic. Not because they like him, they knew he's a worn out politician, but they are supporting him the same way they are supporting Milo Djukanovic and Edi Rama, and are against the protests in all three of those countries, because these are NATO players in the region. So I would say that the formula of, you know, Assad versus the West doesn't work here. It is the dictator with the help of us. Maybe a parallel with Noriega or somebody from, or Pinochet or somebody from Latin America would work more. So this is, in my opinion, the situation here.
Okay, Stefan, I learned a lot about the opposition's view from this interview, and I think our listeners did too. It was very valuable to listen to, and especially to have on a platform such as ours, because it helps us remain balanced. Thanks again.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we think back on what both Joaquin and Stefan shared with the city, I think we can agree that both of them are probably going to disagree for the most part. But what they do seem to have in common is an understanding that responsible pressure, from the ground up on the elected leadership of Serbia could have a positive effect in possibly preempting it from any speculated sellout of the historic cradle of Serbian civilization that is nowadays the NATO-occupied province of Kosovo and Metohija. So if you guys haven't yet made up your mind about which side to support, or if you're just interested in listening to the points once again, I strongly encourage you guys to repeat this program, listen to it again, and please share it with your friends. This is a very important issue, and I expect we'll be covering it more in the near future. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Korepko. Thank you for listening, and take care.